Assalamu alaikum och hjärtligt välkommen till Koranpodden. Jag heter Sally och detta är podcasten som hjälper dig förstå Allahs ord och där vi träffar spännande personer och samtalar med dem om hur Koranens budskap påverkar deras liv. Du lyssnar på poddavsnitt 149 som blir säsongens sista poddavsnitt. Vi tar en längre vinterledighet och återkommer inshallah med Guds vilja den 8 februari 2021 med en faktaspäckad säsong 5. Men säsong 4 har varit en fantastisk resa och upplevelse. Jag har intervjuat flera personer som på olika sätt tjänar mänskligheten och sprider glädje och värme. Det har verkligen känts skönt att få dela deras berättelser och deras stories med dig. Du har även fått lyssna på flera föredrag av mig som belyst islams läror på olika sätt denna säsong. Och det kanske mest unika med säsong 4 har varit poddradioserien om gatukatten Muhadisa och hans äventyr i Medina i två delar. En fiktiv berättelse av Håkan Larsson som fick en att tänka efter och värdesätta det som består och inte det som förgår. 2020 är ett år som många av oss kommer att minnas. Det har varit ett mycket prövande år och svårt för många av oss, men samtidigt ett år som givit många av oss nya insikter och saker att vara tacksamma för som vi tidigare har tagit för givet. Under 2020 har Koranpodden uppnått nya mål och resultat. Vi nådde också nya milstolpar. Vi passerade nyligen 2000 följare på Instagram och just nu har vi 7697 personer som gillar och följer Koranpodden via Facebook. Via vår hemsida har vi totalt delat ut fler än 300 stycken gratis koran på svenska och under säsong 4 har våra lyssnare totalt laddat ner 18 237 avsnitt. För allt detta är jag djupt tacksam till för Gud. Tack till er alla som lyssnar regelbundet, stöttar på olika sätt och som sprider ordet vidare. Utan er hjälp hade det varit mycket svårt att nå dessa goda resultat. Jag vill också passa på att dela ett lyssnarmail som jag fick för några dagar sedan. Personen skriver: Hej Sally. Jag har läst Koranen både på svenska och turkiska och har alltid känt att jag skulle vilja höra någon tolka mer på ett lättsamt sätt så att jag kunde förstå Allahs ord bättre. Sedan hittade jag Koranpodden. What a blessing, alhamdulillah. Vilket fantastiskt jobb du gör. Du får oss alla att komma närmare Koranen på ett bättre sätt. Sluta aldrig med det du gör. Jag brukade bara lyssna på musik på min Spotify, men nu lyssnar jag bara på Koranpodden. Jag har även köpt din bok Sista sändebudet. Må Gud belöna dig, du inspirerar mig djupt. Du är en förebild för många av oss. Ha det bäst inshallah och någon gång hoppas jag kunna få vara med och lyssna på din föreläsning. Jag insåg mer och mer efter att ha lyssnat på Koranpodden att jag måste göra mer med mitt liv. Att det inte räcker att bara be och tro att man har ett fint beteende. Att vara mer till nytta i samhället kommer att bli mitt mål, inshallah. Slutcitat. Tack för ditt otroligt värmande meddelande. Du summerar säsong 4 och hela Koranpodden på ett fint sätt. Låt oss ta det ljus av tro som finns i våra hjärtan och låta sprida dess värme genom att tjäna människorna och samhället där vi bor. Detta var profeternas och de rättfärdigas tillvägagångssätt. Okej, till veckans gäst. Idag ska du få lyssna på mitt samtal tillsammans med Simon Doenvang från Danmark, men som idag bor i Trelleborg. Simon driver idag en framgångsrik webbutik i Skåne där hon säljer specialdesignade muslimska posters för ditt hem. Hon har tagit fram mer än 700 olika posters. En otrolig begåvning, mashallah. I samtalet berättar hon bland annat hur hon konverterade till islam och hur hon kom i kontakt med muslimer i Vietnam. Det blev ett öppenhjärtligt samtal om livet och om tron och skönhet. Okej, nog med försnack. Här är mitt samtal med Simone som konverterade till islam och som idag förskönar hem i hela världen med sina vackra muslimska posters.
Well, it's a pleasure, Simone, to be here in your office.
Yeah.
In your new office.
Yeah.
It's very beautiful.
Thank you.
And bigger than the first office where I met you.
Yeah.
How does it feel to be in this new place?
It's a little bit, it feels a little bit unrealistic because I started from my home and then like a year into the business, we moved into the first office where you came the first time.
Yeah.
And now it's the third year and we moved here.
Yeah.
So, well, alhamdulillah, I don't know what to say.
It goes very quickly.
Yeah.
I remember when me and my wife, or she started her business, that was in the basement of my parents' house. So customers used to come to the basement and look at clothes, you know?
Oh, that's sweet, mashallah.
So, but, you know, natural growth has to start there.
Of course.
I think it's important for every business that starts small, see how it goes, and if it grows, take it to the next level.
Yeah, you grow. Like, it's an adjustment you have to do along the way. Yeah. Definitely.
I would like to tell the story of how I found about your place. And it was late and I was on my Instagram, you know, going through the flow, you know, with my finger. And then all of a sudden this advertisement came up and it was you sitting in a beautiful office. And I think you were drawing something.
Yeah.
And then it was like flashes of your paintings and you, and I was like, wow, mashallah, so beautiful pictures and photos and drawings. And so I naturally clicked on the link on the advertisement and I came to your website and I'm like, wow, it looks like a European Muslim, probably there in America or the UK, you know, far away from Sweden. And so I just went to the contact page. I was, you know, a little bit curious, where is this company? And I looked, and you know, I'm from Malmo, Sweden. And when I looked, I saw it's from Landskrona.
No, Trelleborg.
Trelleborg. And you see, I always mix that up. But Trelleborg, it's like 20 minutes with my car. I couldn't believe it. So I ran to my wife. I'm like, check this out. It's like this beautiful paintings and this beautiful work is done in Trelleborg, like 20 minutes from here. So I was so excited. And we talked about it, that she could buy your paintings for her store to sell them. And here we are today, Simone.
Yeah, quite interesting.
So how, if we start with your story of how you found out about Islam, because you were not born as a Muslim, as your faith. You want to tell me about your story?
Yeah, of course. I'm from Denmark. Mm. And obviously we're not born Muslims.
Yeah.
I think my journey to Islam, I had a lot of Muslim friends growing up, but it was not really that caught me on. Mm. So it, like, the community was not completely unfamiliar with me. Like it felt normal for me that people were Muslim. So it was never really a question mark about that. But later in life, like after I finished gymnasium, high school, I wanted to travel. And my first place was actually Vietnam. It was in Asia. It's not a Muslim country.
No.
But when you have this, what do you say, like a little bit adventurous, the curiosity, while traveling, like I became curious about the religions of people. And I actually started reading a little bit into Buddhism while I was in Vietnam. But I didn't find it to be something that was, it didn't feel true to me.
Mm.
And I stayed in Vietnam, I think, totally for almost 3 years.
what? Yeah. 3 years in Vietnam?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, you're traveling. Yeah, yeah, 1 week or 1 month max, 3 years.
No, I lived there and worked there also.
Okay, yeah, yeah. So what kind of work did you do in Vietnam?
I did marketing in Vietnam. Okay. I worked for a traveling company in Saigon, Ho Chi Minh City. It's the biggest city. But my uncle, he also lived in Vietnam at that time. Okay. So that was why I went there on holiday the first
because
time.
Because I'm just naturally thinking, who travels from Denmark to work in
Vietnam?
I was curious. Yeah. Okay, cool.
But I was interested in religions and in general. And I remember he had cousins who were working for the pagodas. But I found the religion to be...
What religion was that?
It was Buddhism.
Uh-huh, okay.
Yeah. But then after I left Vietnam and came back to Denmark, I became quite curious about the Middle East.
Mm-hmm. How and, come?
You know, I wanted to have more adventure. I had seen Asia. I was very familiar with the Vietnamese culture and this more traditional, and I learned a lot while staying there. So this... Like in here, we're very individualistic.
Mm.
And in Asia as well, at the Middle East, you're more like have a family bond and are very social. And I got used to that. And then after Vietnam, I wanted to find my own place because my uncle, he was in Vietnam as well. And I was kind of like, no, I want to go and see something by myself. And then I was like, okay, I think I want to go to the Middle East and see this culture.
Mm.
And my mom, she was working at a Turkish school in Denmark. So she had the Quran lying at home. And I was like, okay, if I'm going to go to the Middle East, I need to know a little bit about the religion. I need to learn a little bit about Islam.
Mm.
So I took the Quran we had in Danish at home and I started reading it. And the weirdest thing happened, actually. Like, I started to have dreams in Arabic. And I don't understand Arabic and I don't speak Arabic.
Because you were reading the Quran in Danish.
I was reading it in Danish.
And having dreams in Arabic.
It was very odd.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like, whoa, what is this? And the more I read into the Quran, the more I realized this is actually a very scientific religion.
Mm.
Like everything you read can explain by science and biology and... even things you can't explain with science and biology. But what really struck me was that it was the only religion I had come across that was logic. And I cannot argue with that. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no questions about that. So I decided to convert to Islam.
So by yourself reading the Quran, and then after that, how long did you study the Quran and read it before you decided that you want to...
It was fairly early on because I never had that like instant attachment to any religion. Like I didn't have any question marks after starting to read the Quran.
Wow.
I was like, no, this is it. And I was a little bit freaked out because I grew up in a fairly atheist family.
Yeah.
I've always been curious about religion, but it was, I don't know, it just struck.
Mm-hmm. So you took your Shahada. Can you take us back to that day when you took your Shahada where you were? And it was in the mosque.
It was in the mosque.
You want to tell a little bit about that, how that felt then?
I felt very happy and relieved. But yeah, I can't really explain it. You know, it was just wonderful. And I was a little bit nervous because of my family and how they would react. And it took some time before I really told anyone I had converted to Islam. Mm. Because I wanted time to also... The thing is, I went to the Middle East and I started traveling around in some of the countries.
Was that before or after you became a Muslim?
It was after.
Okay, so you converted and then you went traveling. Yeah,
exactly. So I went around and I quite fast noticed that there was differences between how people practice Islam.
Mm.
And a lot of it is quite cultural. So I didn't tell people in the beginning because I wanted to... like absorb what was the religion and what is people's culture. So I actually worked in Dubai and in Pakistan also.
Okay, Pakistan is not in the Middle East, but...
No, it's in Asia, but
you're just
I'll
just go to Pakistan as well.
No.
But that's a far... How long did you work in Dubai and Pakistan?
I worked for one advertising company after I came back from Vietnam and everything. So they had offices in Dubai and in Pakistan, like a lot of the... technical stuff was done there. So I went there, obviously. And Well, you experience what is the difference between the culture and the religion when you actually go to the countries where Muslims come from.
Exactly. So you can kind of like see what's cultural in Dubai,
yeah,
and what's cultural in Pakistan. And then you can also see what's similar. And maybe that's the Islamic,
yeah, exactly,
faith that they have.
Yeah. Mm.
So okay. How was it working in Dubai? People dream about Dubai, yeah, and they want to go there, and it's a lot of commercial on CNN. And
it's because it's very flashy.
Yeah,
I have to say it's a little bit sad because a lot of the actual Arabic culture is gone from Dubai. It's very commercialized. Like usually when you travel to a country, you can kind of connect and feel that there's a culture and some roots, but you don't feel that in Dubai.
Mm.
It's quite empty.
I had a Muslim friend who went to Dubai. He was not at all impressed because he didn't like those flashy stuff. So he had to like go outside town to find these small places.
They have places, but they're hidden away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in contrast that to Pakistan, how was it in Pakistan?
Pakistan was unique.
Mm.
You will meet the smartest people you will ever meet in Pakistan and the most ignorant.
Yeah.
It's kind of one or the other.
Yeah.
I still have some amazing friends.
Mm.
But I also realized while in Pakistan that some people, they bring too much of their culture into the religion. I know there's sometimes people argue whether or not you can read the Quran by yourself.
Yeah.
I had already read in the Quran that you should study the Quran. But in Pakistan, I was told by people I was not allowed to read it.
Yeah.
And it struck me as a little bit in a contrast to what I had actually read in the Quran.
Yeah.
And that because I wasn't really obviously Muslim, I was like, okay, this is a cultural thing.
Yeah.
So, no.
And I think it happens to some religions where people make it so holy, you don't have access to it.
Yeah.
Because it's the revelation of God to human beings, to everybody. It's so obvious when you read the message. But I've heard it also from Turkish people who say you cannot read it by yourself. You cannot understand it. You need people, rabbi, you know, like imams.
Yeah, you need an imam to tell you what
rabbis.
Is
you know, you get these special people that can interpret for you. I mean, they can help you, but in the end of the day, the Quran is something personal.
It's from God to humans.
Yeah. And it's meant for you to read and study and understand it. So I've never really, it's very strange for me, you know, to hear that.
But that's a cultural thing.
Definitely
and
a cultural thing.
And I learned that when I was there.
And I think it's something that happens to all religions.
Yeah.
Like Christianity was also the same thing.
Yeah.
Bible, you should read it in Latin. People didn't understand it. The priest, you know, told about it. So, and that has happened to Islam also, but it's not fair when you study the scripture or the Quran.
No, it's sad because it's very beautiful. Mm. Like, I really enjoy reading Quran.
Yeah, because it makes you, Allah tells you, think about this.
Yeah.
How do, when people behave like this, how do you feel when you look at the sky, the animals and all that stuff? To not read that and understand, you're missing out on so much.
Definitely.
And then you know you're encouraged to recite the Quran in prayer. Well, you're gonna like turn off your brain when you read the Quran in prayer.
It's very odd. Like I don't know, it becomes more of a, I would say, almost singing thing that people do instead of understanding it.
Yeah.
And I think it's more important that you sit down and try to understand what message God is sending to humans, because when you read in the Quran, this is something for all time. Like it's not something specifically for one group of people. It's for everyone. And you should understand what you're saying and what you're reading. What is your religion? What is God trying to tell you?
Mm.
And
So it was Dubai and it was Pakistan. Did you travel to any other country?
Yeah, I went to Dubai, to Pakistan. I have been to Turkey many times now because my husband is from Turkey.
Yes.
I have been to Iran as well. And I hope to see more of the Middle East.
Mm.
I enjoy the culture, really. Mm. You know, we can come off as a little bit cold in Scandinavia.
Tell my wife about that.
Yeah,
she's from America.
She's
like, why are people so cold here? They don't look at you. They don't even, you know, smile.
No.
I'm like, we are actually warming our heart, but I don't know.
Yeah. So I really enjoy that. And I also love that about living in Vietnam. People are very social. Like,
yeah.
The working hours are very long, But, you know, you always meet up with your colleagues. You go out, have a long lunch, sit and drink coffee. In the evening, you're out together. And you do that in the Middle East, too. And I really enjoy that. Mm. Like, people are so nice. Like,
yeah.
The Middle East has such a bad reputation here. It's so sad because, you know, if you take the positive things out from every culture, it's such a nice place. And there's so much food and there's so much love between people. And, you know, people would literally feed you until you die.
Yeah, I know. Eat more, please.
But,
hospitality is very beautiful to experience. You cannot read about it. You have to go there and experience it.
Yeah.
So you do this traveling and then you come back to Denmark.
Mm.
What have you learned of all this traveling in the Muslim world? If you can summarize it.
I have learned not to trust what the media says.
Yeah.
Definitely. I think Scandinavia is quite unique. We live in a little bit in a bubble reality. Like, Scandinavia is not the rest of the world. And it made me realize a lot of things about my own culture as well, because we have a tendency to have we think we're doing it the best way.
Yeah.
And when you travel, you see, okay, maybe my own culture is not the best one. If we took something from someone else, it could be even better. And I think this kind of mixture of people is much better. Like, you grow if you want to.
Mm.
And yeah.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you have to, traveling broadens your mind, gets perspective to your own culture. And because my parents are from Turkey, and I grew up in Turkish culture, but grew up born and raised in Sweden. So I get these two cultures and it broadens my mind. And, you know, if you get beyond the nationalistic approach to countries and stuff, then you start like, wow, this culture has this beautiful thing. Yeah. So I'll hold on to that, but I don't like that stuff. That's not so good in that culture. So you pick the best part from different cultures and broadens and makes your life more rich, I think.
Definitely. You know, I think nationalism in general is quite bad because you cannot say that this country is the best because I was born here. That's quite narcissistic. And
it's silly because you didn't choose to be born there. No. You know, it's like, why are you so proud of something that you did not do anything about? You just, you know, God chose that you getting born there. It's nothing special.
No, it's random. You don't have any say in it. You were born in a country that doesn't make it the best country in the world.
I think my perspective on that is that when you don't have faith in God, then you have to, then there's a vacuum. I mean, there's an empty space.
Yeah.
And then there comes people and trying to fill that space. And so if you don't have God or religion there, then you fill it with nationalism or something else.
Yeah.
So you come back from Middle East and doing advertisement stuff around, and then how do you start this beautiful business that you have going on right now?
Well, the first thing has to be my husband.
Mm-hmm.
I came back from, it was actually my second round in Vietnam.
Yeah, because you're from Denmark.
I'm from Denmark.
And then we're doing this interview in Sweden.
Yeah.
So something happened there.
Yes. So in the middle of the traveling and everything, I wrote some articles for a website called Muslim.com.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote about converting to Islam. And I wrote about the Muslim community in Vietnam. And my husband, he read those articles and he was like, hey, this girl, she sounds very interesting. Mm. She sounds like she's quite unique and she's Danish. It's not so far away from here.
It's kind of cool, you know, that he has, he finds out about you from your articles. So, I never thought that you, when you wrote that article, that your future husband will be reading.
No, because I have a unique family name. So it's only my family in the whole world called Dunwang.
Mm.
So if you meet someone called Dunwang, it's someone I'm related to. So he looked me up on Facebook. He found me and he wrote, hey, you're very interesting. I read your articles. Do you want to go on a date in Malmö? And I had never been to Malmö before. Yeah. Believe it or not, I'm from Denmark, but I hadn't.
So no, because it's a little town. It's not so important. Yeah.
And then I went here and we went on a date. Mm. And then the end of the date, he's like, you are so unique. You need to marry me. So on the first date.
And he's right here. Yeah. MashaAllah, he's taking pictures. Very humble brother.
Yeah.
MashaAllah.
So yeah. Then.
What did you think then? It's like you just read my articles and you think, or what do you think?
You know, I have to say, you know, when you sit down and have a conversation and it's not like, he's not the romantic type at all.
Okay.
But he's straight to the point.
I like that. I like that.
Like no hidden agenda, no nothing. So we sat and had like an adult conversation about relationship and what we're expecting from marriage and partner and so on. So yeah, we saw that, okay, we have the same type of mentality and so on. So I was like, okay, why not?
Or after the first date?
Yeah.
Wow.
And then he kidnapped me to Sweden. He came and visited me. I was staying with my mother because I just came back from Vietnam. And he said, pack your bags, you're coming with me.
Wow.
And then straight to Imam.
And what were you thinking when you were leaving Denmark? But you, I mean, you have traveled, so it was not so difficult for you to leave, actually. But what were you thinking moving to Sweden? What am I going to do now?
I don't really know what I was expecting. Like, I was expecting Swedish people to be like Danish people. I found out they're not.
No, exactly.
It kind of shocked me.
Okay.
I thought we had like completely the same culture, but it's really
very different. Yeah.
It surprised me. Mm. It caught me a bit off guard.
If Danish people are cold and Swedish people are more cold than that.
Yeah, exactly. No, because Denmark is still a small country. Yeah. So you are more forced to be together.
Yeah.
But Sweden is a huge land, and there's not that many people. So I think people more talkative in Denmark than they are in Sweden. Mm. And that shocked me in the beginning because I thought it was going to be exactly the same.
Mm.
But yeah, it was interesting.
So you get married and you must be thinking, well, what kind of business am I going to do? What kind of work am I going to do in Sweden? Is that when the...
Not yet. I started study from Copenhagen Business School on distance marketing.
Okay.
Because I had been working with marketing, but it was also a little bit random. I ended up working in marketing and advertising. It was more like I got my advertising job because I was creative and then someone referred me. And I had been working with this for a few years now, so I decided I need to go and get a degree.
Yeah.
So I was studying and then in the middle of the studying, I've always been painting and always been taking pictures when traveling. Like my family are very artistic.
Mm.
So I was sitting and making paintings for our home. And I said to my husband, hey, can we maybe sell the paintings? And he's like, no, you can't. Take too much time.
Yeah.
you cannot make enough money out of that to make a living.
Yeah.
And then I was sitting and thinking, how can I, produce more?
Mm.
And then I was like, maybe there's Islamic posters. And then I looked and there was nothing.
Okay.
I couldn't find anything. Like everything was very traditional. It was this gold bling plastic kind of thing.
I know those. I've seen those in Rosengård.
And that is not Scandinavian style. Like you cannot fit it into a modern home.
No, that's true.
So I actually made a business plan. And then one morning I came to my husband. And I was like, I have an idea. I was thinking maybe we can do Islamic posters, but Scandinavian design.
Mm.
And he was like, okay, tell me more. And then I showed him one example of one Swedish company called, I think, Desenio.
Mm-hmm.
They're doing like normal pictures and
posters for
normal posters. Mm. And I said, I want to do this, but for Muslims. So yeah, I showed it to him and he was like, okay, how much money do we need? And then we decided, okay, fair enough, we're going to start this one.
So how did you reach your customers? How did you like launch it and the ball started to...
I made my own website to begin with. I took some courses at Folkuniversitetet in Malmö on how to do Photoshop and these things. So I could get a little bit more into the graphic design because I was painting and taking pictures, but I didn't have that much knowledge to use this type of program. So I took some courses and I built the website. And then I was studying marketing at that point. And I took, like, while I was doing that on distance, I was looking into marketing methods. And a lot of it is into social media as a part of the digital marketing.
Yeah.
So I had like the tools from the school to know how to reach the customers on social media. And I just looked what the other companies are doing as well, like how are these big poster companies reaching their customers. And it is like very much based on social media. Muslims are very active on social media.
Mm.
And yeah, I just started.
Mm. So what's unique about your posters? What is it? Scandinavian? What does that mean?
The Scandinavian style is a little more down to earth. We don't have this very broad use of colors. It is often very simple, very clear. Mm. Yeah, definitely.
Because when I was with my wife in Istanbul and yeah. we were going to buy stuff for her store, she's also having a Muslim store with yeah. different things. So we were in this big warehouse. He was selling tons and tons of different things. So we were looking and he's like, oh, well, I have these Islamic paintings.
Mm.
And we're looking, it was like plastic, gold, bling, bling, you know, we're like, ah, we can't take that, you know? And it was funny. We're like, and we were honest. We just said, we don't think this fits the Swedish market.
No.
And he's like, yeah, yeah, I know you Swedes. You're like boring. It's just going to be one color, you know, boring. So in one way, yeah, maybe other people will maybe see it as something boring. But for me, it's minimalistic. And I like it, you know. So how has, because you're going international, you're not just selling these posters in Sweden or Denmark. How are people seeing your poster? What kind of feedback are you getting of your Scandinavian?
No, people stuff? Love it because especially the younger generation and second generation of Muslims who are living in Europe, they don't want to fill up their home with the same stuff that their parents did. They yeah. want modern furniture, modern interior. So the success of the company came quite fast because it was a gap in the market. Like no one did this type of things for Muslims at that time. So it was completely new. And no, people were very happy. Like I am getting messages from people who are saying, oh, it's so nice. Mashallah. Thank you, sister. You made this stuff. It's so unique.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because people want to, that's their home.
Mm.
And they want to be reminded of their faith.
Yeah.
And the home is very special and what people want to, so your posters, what kind of feeling do you want to give of the faith? Because it's Islamic art. So, I mean, you have, how many posters do you have now on your website?
750.
Oh my God. That's huge.
Yeah, that's a lot.
Selection. Do you have like categories of posters? Like some posters are like, I want to give this feeling or you just, what kind of categories of posters do you have?
So I have one category called Islamic. This is the Arabic calligraphy.
Yeah.
This is the largest category of posters, and this is often working in Islamic words, Allah and Muhammad, and you know, it's Arabic.
Yeah.
And then there is masjids and mosques, which is of course photography. Also a little bit of painting and drawings, like you see here.
Yeah,
like
see here on the wall.
There's some pictures here on the wall with some hand-drawn pieces.
Mm.
It took forever to make.
It's very beautiful.
It took like 6 hours.
Six hours to do this. We're looking at the Medina.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is this by hand?
Yeah.
Wow. Incredible.
Like there's this one, we just started like a new collection, a little bit more burnt colors, a little more brown earth colors.
Yeah,
it's quite popular right now.
Mm.
The one just behind you is Ikra.
Yeah.
This is made with a little bit of African touch to it.
Yeah.
This is a vector-based design. So, yeah.
Very beautiful.
So this is done in company.
That's my colors also, brown earth colors.
Yeah, they're doing a huge comeback right now.
Which one? The earth colors?
The earth colors.
Yeah.
Like we went through, I think, two, three years ago, it was this dusty pink and dusty blue and green.
Mm.
And then into like last year, it was very much beige.
Mm.
Like beige was really the color. Like right now, I see like this terracotta, this ochre, burnt orange, brownish color.
Mm.
And because they're going very well with the beige from last year, so it's fun to see the development of what people actually.
So how do you keep yourself updated with all these?
I read a lot of magazines.
Okay, so you keep yourself updated like that.
Yeah, definitely.
Okay.
I also like going to exhibitions. Like there's this museum in Denmark called Louisiana. It's up in the north.
Mm.
It's an amazing museum.
Okay. What kind of museum is that?
Well, they have a lot of modern art. Mm-hmm. Modern art. Mm-hmm. They have, it's not that museum feel you have there, because the building is quite, it has the 60s, 70s styles.
Yeah.
But it's, modern art, definitely.
Because that's something that I'm interested in. How do you keep yourself inspired to produce, 750 posters with design? That's like in 3 years, that's...
But I'm sitting and doing weekly also. So we just moved into the new building here, but otherwise I'm sitting weekly and making maybe 5-10 new designs.
Every week. So how do you, because people are like, if they write, they're like, I have to be inspired to write, I don't feel like writing, I don't get any new ideas. How do you keep yourself getting new ideas every week? Is it by reading the newspaper? Those magazines?
Or? Yeah, I read a lot of interior magazines to keep updated what non-Muslims are doing. Mm. Often the community is like one season behind. Mm. So I can follow there and be one of the first ones who come out with this type of colors or style or something. And then, of course, you look online on Pinterest to see what do people do with their homes right now. And then museums, definitely.
Yeah. So you've been doing this business. Has any newspaper contacted you or media asking about,
No, actually not.
No.
No.
And I was thinking also that you had some kind of cooperation with some other people in other countries. Mm-hmm. Can you tell me a little bit about that?
I actually enjoy doing collaboration with other Muslim companies. We did one with one American company called Nominal. They sell jewelry in the U.S.,
okay,
Islamic jewelry. We did a gift bag. Mm-hmm. Like we did one of our designs in a gold print, but with their calligraphy. And then we actually are wearing one of the necklaces.
Okay.
Like this Ayat al-Kursi necklace.
Okay.
We had the calligraphy from this necklace on one of the posters, and then we sold it as a gift, but for limited edition.
Yeah.
And then...
How did that cooperation come about? Did you contact them or they contacted you?
I contacted them.
Oh, okay, cool.
Because I thought it would be interesting. We just got the gold printers. So I was like, we can use them for something.
Cool.
Because, I feel like more Muslim companies need to, instead of competing with each other, actually work with each other instead to bring the community up. Mm. So
I think customers appreciate that when different Muslim companies get together and they do something.
Yeah, definitely.
Together.
Also, I think right now with all the packages that we ship, I have one very good friend in Germany. She has one company called Hijabi. Mm-hmm. And she's selling Islamic clothes, but modern, very stylish, actually very Scandinavian type Islamic clothes.
Yeah.
But abayas and these things.
In Germany.
In Germany. So we also do a little bit cross promotion. Like when people are buying from us, they get one discount code to her website.
Yeah.
And then when people buy from her, they get one discount code to my website.
That's smart. Yeah. So you send your posters internationally. So you can be anywhere.
Yes.
On this planet,
yeah,
and order your posters.
It's so odd because people are starting to recognize me on the streets.
For real?
Yeah.
In the streets where? Like in Sweden or Denmark, or when both. You're traveling?
Both. Yeah. Like it happened in Denmark once. We were at the airport and someone was like, hey, I know you. I'm like, okay. She's like, yeah, I have your posters in home. I'm like, okay.
Mashallah. Yeah. That's so nice. Yeah.
It happened, I think, a few days ago. I'm in the middle of taking my driver license.
Yeah.
And one guy, he came in, he was struggling to get inside the driving school with the child. Mm. And I went and opened the door and then I sat down again. And then he looked at me and he's like, yashena yendai. I know who you are. I'm like, okay.
But did he know that your company is located in Sweden?
No.
Yeah, that must be amazing for many customers that they're like, a company like this is located in Sweden.
Yeah, the thing is, I knew I wanted to do it internationally. So the first website we made, we can only have one currency. Mm-hmm. And I started out selling in euros. Mm. So the first website was in English with euros. So that's why a lot of Swedish people are often missing that it's based in Sweden.
Yeah.
That's also why we're working on national websites now. Because there are often Swedish people writing if we ship to Sweden. Mm. And I want to make it a little bit broader in here as well, because we straight away focused to sell to all of Europe.
Yeah, so actually more countries from other than Sweden that are ordering.
Yeah.
So which country is most popular, ordering most posters?
Right now, Germany has always been number one.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Turkish people, and Turkish people really love what we do.
Is that because your husband is also involved in the...
I don't know.
In the stylish... Does he have any word in your design, or is just...
He has suggestions sometimes.
Suggestions, okay. Yeah.
You know, sometimes I'm a little bit too Scandinavian. Like, I want it a little bit simple. He's like, no, you should add a little more flower, a little more.
Yeah.
So, but the balance is good.
Yeah. So, so Germany, number one.
Yes. Mm. And then I would say Denmark and the UK and France are switching on the second and third.
Any new country popping up, or a country you would be like, what?
The US, we are starting to sell a lot to. And cool. We are not advertising in the US yet.
So that's a big market. Yeah. Once you start advertising there and focusing, that could be a huge... But have you got any like order from like some country that you're like, what? Is there any Muslims there?
No, not really. Like,
did you get any order from Vietnam?
No, actually. But I have seen the Muslim community is very small. It's like 65,000 Muslims.
I was going to almost ask you about that. Yeah. That must be kind of cool. Like the Muslim community in Vietnam. Yeah. That must be very unique.
It is. It is quite unique. Yeah. It is a whole different story because it's a historical thing.
Yeah.
Because when Islam came to Asia, it traveled at the time when Malaysia and Indonesia became Muslim. Mm. Actually, they started to become Muslim in Vietnam too. Mm. But it was not Vietnam back then. It was something called the Cham Kingdom.
Okay.
And the Cham King converted to Islam.
Mm.
But they were Hindus before.
Okay.
So the Vietnamese were in the central of Vietnam. But then the Vietnamese invaded the south where the Cham people were living and took over this part. So the Cham King and the Cham people were kind of split. So the people who were like more central Vietnam, they did not become Muslims. They stayed Hindu. And the people from the south, they escaped with the Mekong River from the south into Cambodia. And then from Cambodia, they ran to Malaysia.
Mm-hmm.
So they actually have Muslims in a little bit of Islamic history in Vietnam.
Okay. Wow, I didn't know about that.
No, it's quite interesting.
So you're doing posters. And now lately, which I've seen on your website, you have gone into another product category.
Yes.
You want to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So like for the company, inshallah in the future, we wanted to be more like a lifestyle brand. So we have recently started to expand the product line a little bit, and we just published, I think it's like 2 weeks ago, pillowcases. Mm. So a little more to work with textiles as well.
How did that idea come up, that you're going to do pillow covers?
Actually, I had the idea for quite some time. And last year, I met one girl. She also said, maybe you want to do it. But then when I asked her recently, I didn't hear back from her. But then I asked my friend in Germany, who is doing clothes. I said, do you know anyone who can do this for us? And she gave us one contact in Turkey, actually.
Yeah.
So, and this guy in Turkey, he was really on top of it with quality and everything. So...
They're pretty good in it with quality when it comes to fabric.
Yeah, exactly.
In Turkey.
Yeah.
So, so the pillow, and then you have the posters. And frames. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your frames? Because when we look at the wall here, you have different frames. You have wooden frames and black frames.
Yeah. We have like a selection. We just actually changed supplier. Mm. So the wood colors are still wood. And it's like a dark wood.
Mm.
Kind of like a fake walnut.
Yeah.
And then there's lightwood, which is oak. And the frames we just received when we moved here, they're not published on the website yet. It's aluminium frames.
Mm.
So very good quality frames that we got from a supplier here in Europe also. But you see, the storage outside is completely full.
Yeah. So if I want to... design my house, I want to put up some Islamic posters, what's your best tip? Like, I've just moved into an apartment, I have like empty walls, I want to design my house, I want to use some of your posts. What should I think?
First of all, I actually made a video about it on YouTube. Yeah,
great.
Explaining it, because
I'll put a link to that in the show notes to this podcast episode.
And then the first thing you should think about is the wall you want to hang them on.
Mm-hmm.
You need to find a combination that's kind of fitting with the wall area.
That's my phone. I'm just going to hang up there. Sorry about that.
No problem. Busy people. So when you have decided the wall area you want to hang it on, you often mirror what furniture you have around. So let's say you have a couch. It's a long furniture. Then you should have a long hanging as well, so it's fitting the area where the furniture are.
Yeah. So I have to think about the furniture I have.
Exactly.
It has to match that.
And when you have found like the combination you can hang behind this furniture, it depends on which sizes you want, how many posters you want. Like if you just want two, you fit it where the furniture are. And when it comes to colors, you often have this, it's like a rule of thumb that you say it's a 60 and 30 and 10% rule. Mm-hmm. The 30% is like, no, the 60% is the main color of the rules, often like...
Of the room.
Yeah. Of the room. Mm-hmm. It's like a neutral, like to say in this room, it would be like white and gray. Yeah. It's often neutral, falls into the 60% of the room. And then the 30% is the color of choice, like the very obvious color. And then the 10% is like a color pop, like one very bright color, let's say it like that. So you often find the posters in this last two colors, this 30 and 10% of the room. And that's where you find, like, let's say you have one pillow, one pillow that's green. This is often, like in the video, I'm just going to tell a little bit.
Yeah.
In the video, I placed one blue sofa with a green pillow. This blue sofa will fall into the 30% of the room, and the green pillow will fall into the 10%. So you often match it with what furniture you have or what you else put around in your room to like bring it all together. You're going to, of course, also just be crazy and mix everything if that's what you want.
It's up to you in the end of the day. But
it's your home.
Yeah, exactly. But it's important to think about the furniture, the wall, the main color, and try to have something. It's not always so easy. Sometimes you want to talk to an interior designer.
That's why people do education sometimes as well.
Yeah, that's not something that you offer now. Tips. I mean, no, not tips, but, you know, actually to come to somebody's home and like... interiorly design.
People ask. People send a lot of messages, and I wish I had time to sit and answer them all.
Yeah.
But to choose what people should have for their home is something that's, you know, it's also a personal choice. Yeah. So you need to talk a lot back and forth with the person first.
Mm.
And like,
it's not something you do in 5 minutes.
No.
Yeah.
Whenever people used to come to the previous office, when they don't know what they want to purchase, it could take 2 hours before they are out the door again. So
Because at the same time, you want to have some poster which is special for you. Like if you want to be reminded of the Kaaba which you have here, or Allah's name, or something else. Wow, I'm all stunned here of the beautiful art.
Yeah,
great. So, anything else about your business and maybe future? You want to expand it to like lifestyle. So you have pillow covers, and then comes other things as well. Anything else that I've missed out about the things that you're doing?
I really wish I actually could read Arabic.
Yeah,
because you see here, there's actually some different calligraphy that I do, but it's often just a guessing game for me.
Yeah.
I look at the shapes of the words and I try to emulate them and edit them. Like you see this is actually...
It's hub.
No, it's sabr.
Sabr, yes, that's true.
It's sabr, but I was sitting and like changing it to a shape that I thought was nice. And then I was asking some friend who was married to an Arab. I said, can he read this? Is this still a word?
Wow, what a workflow. So you actually can't read Arabic.
No.
You look at the word and then you change the shape of it. Mm. And then you double check that with your friend's Arabic husband. Wow. So that's dedication. I mean, you know, some people are just like, oh, I give up. I can't read this. What is this? It's just a bunch of lines.
Yeah.
Wow. But, you know, if you sit down, if you have the time to learn the letters and to be able to read,
Inshallah,
it's not that super hard, you know.
But I think Arabic is, I looked, Danish is quite difficult to learn, but actually I read some place that Arabic was the most difficult language to learn.
It is difficult. I studied Arabic at the university, and, you know, when I was young, I used to go to the mosque to learn all the letters and stuff like that. So for me, it comes a little bit natural, but yeah, whatever you decide to do, if you give it time, you know, you will learn it.
But
eventually,
if business is going good, there's not that much time.
Yeah, I know. Exactly. You know, family, business, do all those.
So I have to say, you know, you need to want to do it. That's the thing. And we have like one category of the website that's typography, that's English letters.
Yeah.
And whenever I'm feeling like, oh my God, there's so much work, I'm thinking, no, you know what, actually, and I say that to my husband too, we're actually helping spreading the word of God through our work also. Yeah. And I think that's a very big blessing.
Yeah, I was just going to come to that question. How do you keep the fire burning, you know, to keep yourself motivated and working all the time? But, you know, just to imagine the thousands of people around the world who every day come into their house and feel the peace and calmness by looking at the post, this must feel great.
Yeah, we have around 400 to 500 new customers every month. It's actually a lot of people.
Wow.
And then, you know, you forget about it when you sit and work on it, but when you sit and actually read through the numbers, you're like, it's actually a lot of people now.
Yeah. And it's beautiful when people write your email or get back to you and say thank you. I just bought that post and it sits perfectly beautiful on my wall, you know. So
the positive reviews, like we have a very high score on Trustpilot. Whenever someone is doing this 5-star review, it's really warming. You become very happy.
That's the fuel for the tank, right?
Yeah,
so to keep you
like,
to move.
That's nice.
It's the same with the podcast. You know, I'm doing this podcast every week, talking to the mic. Sometimes I'm in my closet, dark, with a mic in my hand, you know, because that's the place where with the best sound.
Yeah.
And you're just like talking to this and you're like, is people listening to this? Or am I just talking out to space? And then once in a while, you know, people leave a review or as you know, you walk in the street. The funny thing with me is this is audio.
Yeah.
So sometimes I'm working my wife's store and people don't know my face, you know? And so I'm helping customers, and then the customer is like, wait a minute, I recognize your voice. Are you the crumb pot guy? And I'm like, yeah, kind of. And they're like, oh my, listen to crumb pot every day, you know. I even bought a falafel, and the guy at the falafel place was like, hey, I recognize your voice, you're the pot. Oh my God, I can't believe you're coming here ordering a falafel
so
from
cute.
Me, you know. So it's amazing. People just give so much love and you're back, so you're just like, wow. So you just keep doing it, you know. So
I have to say, my husband, he knew you before he knew the Tahara thing. When I went and talked to your wife the first time, he was like, yeah, her husband is doing something with this podcast something. He knew you actually first.
It's a little small world, you know. But it's nice to meet people who are doing something passionately, you know, serving the community. Do you have like non-Muslims looking at your paintings and buying them? Have you had any such stories?
We have a website for non-Muslims as well.
Okay, cool.
And from that, we're mostly selling to Japan.
Yeah. There's something about Japan and Scandinavia.
Japan and Scandinavia. They
simple style.
Exactly.
Minimalistic.
So we have a wholesaler in Japan.
Mm.
So they are buying, I think, 2 or 3 times a month.
Yeah.
So they are spreading it. But, you know, it's the neutral because I do the photography.
Yeah.
So a lot of the photography, they just buy.
Mm.
And then they sell in Japan.
Perfect. MashaAllah. So all my guests, Simone, I guess to quote something from the Quran and just give a short reflection. Would you like to share something?
Yes. It is actually a little bit connected to converting to Islam.
Yeah.
It is this verse that says, read in the name of your Lord who has created all living things. And it is my favorite verse because I think it's very important as Muslims that we study and that we read and we are curious.
Yeah.
Especially about the religion and the culture.
Yeah. Reading is so close to me. I did a podcast interview with two other friends just about books and reading. And how do you read a book? Do you like, you know, do you like highlight in the book or you don't even touch the book? Yeah. Or how do you, you know, we were like really nerds. But I mean, you know, when you read a book and somebody explains their life, it's like actually living that person's life, seeing life through their eyes. So it's such an amazing experience. And to say no to other people's lives and to beautify your life and make it broader is sad, because reading is, you know, losing people just like going on Twitter and Instagram, reading one-liners and stuff. So
you have to be a little more patient. That's the thing. And you need to use your imagination.
Yeah.
I like reading as well.
Yeah.
A lot. Because you, and it can be anything. Like, there's been so many people who came and went and died, and everyone had something to say and something to learn, like something they can teach you. So it's a shame. People should read more.
I had a podcast series talking about Denmark and Danish Muslims, about Knud Holmbø. I don't know if you know about this Danish Muslim.
Maybe. Is he a photographer?
No, he converted a long time ago when the fascists were living in or had Italy. So he converted and then he traveled North Africa and wrote a book about it.
Nice.
Yeah, I would recommend him. After podcast, I'll give you all the tips.
Okay.
I did a podcast series about his life and from his book. It's amazing to follow his traveling, because he traveled from North Africa. He wanted to do the Hajj. And once while he's traveling, he gets stopped because North Africa is occupied by the Italians. So he gets to tell how the Italians in Libya are treating the native people. And it's very sad, but he's standing up and he's telling the Italians that he's Danish and that he's a Muslim, and they get shocked. They're like, how can you become, why are you a Muslim? These people are like savages, you know?
Yeah.
And he sees the beauty in the culture. And the Muslims, they think he's a spy.
I have heard that too.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what it is.
Oh, it's such a beautiful story. I even went to Denmark. There's a sister from Denmark who read the book. She was so fascinated. She went, traveled where he traveled, interviewed his daughter and stuff like that. She wrote a book about his life in Danish, which I hope I can read someday. I'm a little bit afraid of Danish. Never really sat down and read a Danish book, you know, but so it's an amazing story.
But I have to say, you know, mashallah, a lot of Danish people are actually converting.
Yeah.
It's not a small group. It's often forgotten a little bit because there's so much focus on the immigrants.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of Danish people converting. I think on Facebook, I'm a part of one group. I think there's like 7,000 people.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's not unusual to meet Danish converts.
Yeah. I have interviewed also other Danish Muslims on the podcasts. We just have to get past by the headlines and the media, which always tries to focus on negative stuff. And
just be curious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I think we round up this podcast by be curious, inshallah.
Be curious.
Simone, thank you so much for taking your time this Sunday, receiving here in your beautiful office.
Well,
I really wish you the best. May Allah continue to bless your business and make it successful. I'm so proud of you, and thank you for the amazing service that you're offering the Muslims. And we cannot close this podcast except by you telling where my listeners can go and order these beautiful posters, if they want to get them and if they want to look at them.
Yeah, so I would say doanwang.com, but a lot of people have a little bit problem remembering it.
Yeah.
So at the moment, we, inshallah, next month time, will be able to launch all these national websites. And we have shortened Doanwang to dnvng.dk or .se, or like the national websites.
Yeah, and .com.
Com, yeah, of course.
So in 1 month, this will, so when I, inshallah, launch this podcast, they will be up and running, and I will have links in the show notes so they can just easily go in there and click to get to that website.
If they go to the .com website, they will automatically be redirected to
Their national country website. Exactly. Great. Thank you so much. Thank and you. I wish you a blessed day. Assalamu alaikum.
Tack för att du lyssnade på mitt samtal tillsammans med Simone Doen Wang. Det som jag tar med mig från mitt samtal tillsammans med Simone är vikten av nyfikenhet. Att inte nöja mig med det som redan är bekant och det jag känner väl till. Att jag spenderar all min tid i min trygghetszon. Istället bör jag utmana mig själv och sträcka ut en hand till den andra. Lära känna andra människor, kultur och livsåskådningar. Vara nyfiken helt enkelt. Gud säger i Koranen kapitel 49 vers 13:
Ja, ayyuhan nas inna khalaqnakum min dhakarin wa untha waj'alnakum shu'uban wa qaba'ila lita'arafu. Inna akramakum 'inda Allahi atqakum. Inna Allaha 'alimun khabir.
Människor, vi har skapat er av en man och en kvinna, och vi har samlat er i folk och stammar för att ni ska lära känna varandra. Inför Gud är den av er den bästa vars gudsfruktan är djupast. Gud vet allt, är underrättad om allt. Tack Simon för att du berikar Koranpodden och tusentals hem med dina vackra tavlor. Jag hoppas samtalet inspirerar dig att vilja investera din tid och resurser för att hjälpa andra. Lämna gärna en kommentar om vad du tyckte om säsongens sista poddavsnitt. Gå in på koranpodden.se/149 och lämna ditt svar. All right, nu tar jag en längre vinterledighet och är tillbaks igen, inshallah, den 8 februari 2021. Gå med i vårt nyhetsbrev via Koranpoddens hemsida så skickar jag dig information om säsong 5 och påminner dig i god tid, inshallah, när den har premiär. Glöm inte heller att du kan vara med och stötta säsong 5 genom att donera ett frivilligt belopp via Swish eller Bankgiro. Gå in på Koranpoddens hemsida och klicka på donera-knappen. Jag tackar så mycket på förhand för ditt stöd inför säsong 5. Det var allt för denna gången. Följ oss på Facebook och Instagram om du inte redan gör det för inspirerande och upplyftande Koran-citat under hela veckan. Vill du komma i kontakt med mig eller vill tipsa om någon som du vill att jag intervjuar, så gör du det lättast genom att mejla mig på hej@koranpodden.se. Då återstår det bara för mig att önska dig en härlig vecka. Tack för att just du lyssnar på Koranpodden. Vi hörs igen den 8 februari 2021. Ta väl hand om dig tills dess och glöm inte mig och Koranpodden i din dua, i dina böner. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.